Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Six people were killed when a suicide attacker detonated a car bomb in the center of the Afghan capital, Kabul. At least 22 others were also injured. Officials said Wednesday's blast went off in the Murad Kani district, close to the presidential compound, the defense ministry and the finance ministry. An interior ministry spokesman says the intended target was unclear. No one has claimed responsibility for the attack. Meanwhile, authorities in Pakistan say military jets pounded suspected terrorist hideouts Wednesday, killing at least 30 militants. A new United Nations report finds that human rights defenders in Libya, seeking to shed light on widespread violations and abuses across the country, are subject to violent attacks and threats. The joint report by the UN Support Mission in Libya and the UN Human Rights Office in Geneva presents a very bleak picture of a fragmented, ungovernable society. Lisa Schlein reports.
UN officials warn Libya is falling apart as fighting between two competing governments, as well as among a number of splinter groups, continues unabated. Added to this destructive mix, they say, is the increasingly dangerous presence and threatening activities in the country of the Islamic State group known also as ISIS or ISIL. The report notes humanitarian emergencies are growing and the human rights situation is severely deteriorating with human rights defenders at particular risk. It says they are subject to attacks, including killings, abductions, torture, and other ill treatment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA News. Officials in Nigeria say Boko Haram militants have kidnapped hundreds of people, including many children, from a town on the border with Niger. Nigerian government spokesman Mike Omiri tells the Associated Press the militants abducted residents of Damascus in Borno State as they withdrew from the town earlier this month. Omiri said the Islamist extremists went to Damascus' primary schools, rounded up students and teachers, and then retreated. Spokesman said he could not specify how many people were kidnapped, but local residents put the number as high as 500. News of the kidnappings come as Nigerians prepare to go to the polls Saturday for presidential and parliamentary elections. Yemeni officials say forces loyal to the country's ousted president have captured the international airport in the city of Aden hours after Yemen's current president fled his residence in that city. The fall of Aden's airport, which had already suspended operations Wednesday, comes as Shiite Houthi rebels backed by army units advanced on the city in hopes of capturing it. Earlier Wednesday, Yemeni warplanes from bases controlled by Houthi rebels and their allies targeted the presidential complex in Aden. Officials say President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi is safe at an undisclosed location. The leaders of France, Germany, and Spain gathered Wednesday near the site where a German Wings Airbus A320 crashed into the French Alps, killing all 150 people aboard. French President Francois Hollande, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy talked with rescue workers at a nearby staging field. Hours after the crash, searchers recovered the badly mangled cockpit voice recorder, sent it to Paris, where officials are hoping to be able to listen to the pilot's words in the final moments before the accident. An international court has denied a request from former Liberian President Charles Taylor to serve the rest of his 50-year prison sentence in Rwanda. Special Court for Sierra Leone ruled Wednesday there are no reasons why Taylor should not serve out his time, or rather his prison term, in Britain's Franklin Prison. Taylor was jailed there in September 2013 after the Court Appeals Chamber upheld his conviction on charges of aiding and abetting war crimes and crimes against humanity during Sierra Leone's civil war. The unprecedented success of Arab-Israeli political parties in this month's Israeli election is seen as possibly ushering in a new era of expanded civic engagement for Palestinian citizens of Israel. A coalition of four Arab-dominated political parties known as the Joint List captured 14 seats in the March 17th election that was won by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party. I'm Bob Doty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The journalists are apprehensive. Citizens are apprehensive. Voters are apprehensive. Our neighbors are apprehensive. Africa is apprehensive. The world is apprehensive.
That's Peter Nkanga of the Committee to Protect Journalists, describing the mood in Nigeria prior to Saturday's presidential election. Details coming up.
Also, Cameroon is hosting a conference on Islamic fundamentalism and extremism to educate Muslim clerics about the dangers of ideology espoused by extremist groups.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigeria is preparing for its elections this Saturday, March 28th, in what is a tight race between President Goodluck Jonathan and his People's Democratic Party and challenger former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari of the All Progressives Congress. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, today is in the process of setting up voting stations throughout the country and should have this phase of election preparations completed by the end of the day. Our colleague Peter Cloti is covering the elections and presently is on Victoria Island near Lagos. He provides us with an update on the latest developments leading up to Election Day.
The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, says that ballot papers are being moved from the vault of the Central Bank of Nigeria to all parts of the country in readiness for Saturday's presidential election. And the ballot papers also include that of the National Assembly, which will be in April.
Are there any problems with this aspect of the election preparation? Is everything going smoothly at this point?
So far, so good. The electoral officials I spoke with said that the transportation is being supervised or being helped by the security agencies to ensure nobody tampers with them, and that so far things are running smoothly. They have until evening to complete this task, but so far so good.
And of course, Peter, there's always going to be various opinion polls out there, and I understand you have yet a latest one. I know we had one the other day. So what does this latest opinion poll show, and where did it come from?
Well, a group known as Nigeria Polls and Survey Group, which is an independent organization, just came out with the latest research stating that incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan of the ruling People's Democratic Party will win Saturday's presidential election with 7.01% of the votes. This comes as two other firms, Forward Magazine and Zevland Ventures Limited, the president to win with about 17% of the votes. Of course, the opposition All Progressive Congress rejects all these polling groups, saying they are not a true reflection of the situation on the ground. They blame the PDP of funding the study to skew in its favor ahead of the election. They maintain that the APC has 4 out of the 6 geopolitical zones of Nigeria on its side. And they said they do not see any way by which President Goodluck Jonathan would win the Saturday's election, King.
How much influence do these opinion polls have on Nigerians who are going to be voting on Saturday?
Well, Kim, it remains to be seen how this will be influential, because several people I have spoken with are of the opinion that ethnic and religious sentiments are deeply rooted in how people vote in this country. So it really, really is difficult to predict how these polls at this late stage will influence people's opinion about how they vote or who they vote for in this presidential election campaign.
Also, Peter, I understand there's a lot of talk going around there in Nigeria that if the PDP should lose this election, that it would go back to a military rule.
Yes, Kim, former President Olusegun Obasanjo weighed in on this rumor today after a women's group paid a courtesy call on him. The women's group, of course, is from the All Progressive Congress, the main opposition APC. Former President Obasanjo warns of consequences if rumors that the PDP will hand over to a military regime is credible. He said that the move will undermine the integrity of the election as well as create chaos and instability in Nigeria, which he said will affect the entire West African continent. And he also said that both the African Union and the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, and Nigeria's international partners will not accept any move by the ruling party to stay in power by handing over to an interim military government. He said that will not happen, and the international community will not accept it either.
That was our colleague Peter Clodi speaking to us from Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria.
The Committee to Protect Journalists says Nigerian media have been under intense pressure in the run-up to Saturday's elections. It says more reporters fear for their safety. The International Criminal Court recently warned that it had the power to investigate election-related violence in Nigeria. ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said any person who incites or engages in acts of violence in the context of the upcoming elections is liable to prosecution. Peter Nkanga is the West Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa about the mood among journalists.
The mood can best be summed up exactly with just how the citizenry feels about the election. Because whether we want to take it or not, journalists are a reflection of the environment. And I can tell you that there is apprehension, there is reasonable fear. And that reasonable fear, unfortunately, if it should become a reality, will transcend to the first respondents in such violent states, the journalists. So journalists are apprehensive. Citizens are apprehensive. Voters are apprehensive. Our neighbors are apprehensive. Africa is apprehensive. The world is apprehensive. And that's exactly why even the ICC has come forward now to say, look, as International Criminal Court, that anything that happens in Nigeria, believe me, we are coming for you.
Did any of the Nigerian journalists be specific about the threats they were concerned about?
Threats have come from all locations, from the political parties themselves, their supporters, the security apparatus, be it the military or the police or the DSS or the secret police. It has come from the mob, the public themselves, who, for want of better knowledge of the situation around them, see also journalists as a potential target. So the threats and the fear comes from all quarters, and that's why these elections must be violence-free. They're the ones documenting history, and those who are the perpetrators of this violence will not want to be captured in history. Therefore, journalists fear, and they are reasonable to fear. The National Human Rights Commission has come out to really state how deeply this fear is, that the violence that is characteristic of this 2015 elections might surpass that of 2011 elections, when at least 1,000 people died from post-election violence.
Did the Committee to Protect Journalists find this type of fear throughout the country, or mainly in the north, where we've heard so much about the violence from Boko Haram?
This apprehension, this call for attention is all across the country. You find it in the north? Yes, it's a great deal. Journalists really feel fearful in the north. For example, in 2011, the same group of journalists, the NUJ, that is the Nigerian Union of Journalists, were also attacked in 2011 because they were documenting underage voters and reported it to the police. They became targets of the mob, who were totally against them reporting such truths.
Have you spoken to any journalists who said that they self-censored their own stories because of the fear of being attacked?
What you might otherwise want to do at the whim of a desire, you would think twice. Yes, journalists, definitely. They are more circumspect on what they publish or what they release. One will be asking ourselves that if they have reported what they are restraining themselves from reporting, what benefit would they have had on the society? So at the end of the day, it's a balancing act that journalists, especially in the Northeast, are having to do.
Is the Committee to Protect Journalists making any recommendations at this point, or can anything be done at this point?
Well, I am very, very concerned about journalists covering the elections here in Nigeria. We're just getting unconfirmed reports now that some media house and international media organizations told the journalists have been detained in Maiduguri. And just some weeks back, the Reuters international correspondent was questioned on allegations of being a spy, and different things are happening. What I'm talking about, in essence, is the government must understand that journalists are there to just document history. They are not terrorists. They are not the ones who are instigating the violence. It's the political parties. And so anyone who comes out to attack a journalist, especially if it's deliberate, that person should not be allowed to go scot-free. The CPJ's concerns and recommendations that for whoever is in charge of overseeing security of journalists as well as of the society should do so without any partisanship to ensure that such attackers are brought to justice.
Peter Nkanga is the West Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepua.
The Nigerian High Court has barred the nation's military from deploying troops at voting booths during the March 28th elections. Lawyers for the minority whip of Nigeria's parliament, Femi Bajabiyamila, won the case in the Lagos court. He claimed a strong military presence on voting day would intimidate voters and is a violation of the Constitution. The Lagos High Court lawsuit was filed after voters in Ekiti and Osun in the southwest complained that soldiers conspired to intimidate voters and rig results in last year's by-elections. The court says the decision does not affect the large presence of Nigeria's military in the northwest, where forces from five West African states are fighting Boko Haram rebels. In another development, the government has closed its land and sea borders ahead of Saturday's vote. Interior Minister Patrick Moro says intelligence reports indicate foreigners are trying to enter the country to vote. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Committee to Protect Journalists says Nigerian media have been under intense pressure in the run-up to Saturday's elections. And the Nigerian High Court has barred the nation's military from deploying troops at voting booths during the March 28th national elections. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Cameroon is hosting a conference on Islamic fundamentalism and extremism. The aim is to educate Muslim clerics in the country about the dangers of ideology espoused by extremist groups like the Islamic State and Boko Haram, the Nigerian terrorist group that has recently declared its allegiance to the self-described Islamic Caliphate. Moki Edwin Kenzika reports from Yaoundé.
Suleiman Abba, a Muslim cleric and member of Cameroon's Islamic Cultural and Development Association, says the group organized the conference in collaboration with the government to stop supporters of Islamic State ideology from extending their ideas to Cameroon. He says Islamic State ideology basically centers on promoting terrorism, violence, and intolerance.
Islam is against terrorism. And Islam is again Boko Haram. Cameroonian Muslims have to defend their country, which has been attacked by the terrorists. And secondly, fight the instrumentalization of Islam. We have some people who use Islam to reach their own interests. Islam is peace, and every Muslim in the world should be an ambassador of this peace.
Cameroon's Muslim community traditionally receives funding to construct Islamic schools, mosques, and health centers from mosques in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. But now, students from the Central African nation and clerics are being granted scholarships to study in Arab nations. Suleiman says that since Boko Haram declared its allegiance to the Islamic State, his organization has received information that the Nigerian-based militants are extending their beliefs to Cameroon. He says some mosques are being asked to implement Sharia law, which is one of the objectives of Boko Haram.
Sharia law is defined as the law from Allah. That law has the penal and the civil aspect. Today, when they are talking about Sharia, they just see the penal aspect. Sharia means, for instance, praying, fasting during the month of Ramadan. So we should not follow these terrorists who want to make us know that Sharia is just punitive. We have also a civil aspect. We should take it into consideration.
But not every Muslim agrees. Modibo Mustafa Issa is a cleric in Marwa on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, a stronghold of Boko Haram. He says Allah's message in the Holy Quran should never be compromised for whatever reason. According to him, it was even wrong to invite Christians he described as unbelievers to discuss with Muslims.
Et c'est pour cela qu'Allah Jalla wa Ala, lorsqu'il a parlé de ceux qui n'utilisent pas leur sens pour comprendre et pour regarder ce qu'Allah Jalla wa Ala veut.
He says in the Holy Quran, Allah calls those who do not use their intelligence to know what he wants beasts. He says such people have eyes but do not see, have hearts but do not understand anything, and have ears but do not hear, and will never be accepted by Allah. The conference brought together Christians and Muslims to teach them to promote interreligious tolerance and shun extremism. Reverend Pastor Libon Lilikeng of the Presbyterian Church says Cameroon, more than ever, needs to preach tolerance to avoid interreligious conflicts.
You know, people have different views. The normal thing is to accept, but the abnormal will be the non-acceptance of people really acting in good ethics. What I teach is being committed to God and being active in the social life. It is possible. You can have example of people really being true believers and true actors of in the social scene.
When the Nigerian terrorist group began fighting to create an Islamist caliphate in northern Nigeria, the fighting spilled over to Cameroon. Sociologist Dr. Bridget Ngemba of the University of Yaoundé 1 says the Islamic State ideology Boko Haram has opted for may have a dangerous spillover into Cameroon.
En termes d'idéologie, je voudrais tout simplement dire que l'approche militaire va contribuer à diminuer.
She says a military approach can contribute to reducing violence from terrorism groups, but as far as ideology is concerned, fighting it will take a lot of time because ideology cannot be fought with war weapons. Cameroon has had a history of interreligious tolerance and peaceful coexistence with other denominations until the Nigerian extremist group began attacking the country as it fought to create an Islamic caliphate. Cameroon arrested dozens of Muslim clerics and their faithful for collaborating with the terrorist group. Boko Haram's adherence to the Islamic State has sparked fears the country may come under the influence of extremists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A rights group is praising today's convictions of 20 former high-level Chadian security agents, calling it a victory for justice. Human Rights Watch was responding to former agents being convicted on torture charges during the rule of Hissène Habré from 1982 to 1990. Four defendants were acquitted. The criminal court in N'Djamena ordered the Chadian government and those convicted to pay $125 million in reparations to 7,000 victims of torture. Among those given life sentences was Saleh Yunus, former head of Habré's political police, and Mahamat Jibrin, convicted of actually inflicting much of the torture.
Egyptian president addressed his hopes and concerns about sharing waters of the Nile River while addressing the Ethiopian parliament today during his first official state visit to Ethiopia. Marta van der Wolf reports from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia is building Africa's largest hydropower dam using waters of the Nile. President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said he understands the need for Ethiopia to develop, but warned that conflict should be avoided when utilizing resources and seeking progress. He says your Egyptian brothers also have the right, not only to development, but also the right to life itself, and to live in safe haven on the banks of a river Nile. Ethiopia says that the $4 billion dam will not affect Egypt's access to Nile water. The energy produced from the dam is to be used for Ethiopia's domestic market and for export to countries in the region. The speech comes 2 days after Mr. el-Sisi signed an agreement on the Nile with Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn and Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. No details were released, but the agreement is believed to focus on resolving misunderstandings between Nile countries, causing no harm to one another, and promising to work out detailed procedures in the near future. President el-Sisi called on leaders of all Nile countries to work together on reaching a consensus about the waters. He says one that allows us to overcome the differences and outstanding points in the Nile Basin Initiative Framework Agreement for it to include all the basin countries and to address all their needs. Tensions between Ethiopia and Egypt rose after Ethiopia started dam construction in 2012. Although most of the Nile's water originates in Ethiopia, an old colonial-era agreement gives Egypt the right to over 80% of Nile water. Ethiopia's dam, named the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, is now about 40% completed. Marten van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Nigeria Decides 2015, the final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. Nigeria Decides 2015, on radio with Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, and Nightline Africa. On television with Africa 54 and Straight Talk Africa. On the web at voanews.com. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday, with results as the votes are counted, and on the web to show you where the counting stands and where the votes are coming from. Nigeria Decides 2015. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
Join host Shaka Sali and VOA's Straight Talk Africa this Saturday at 1800 UTC for special coverage of Nigeria's elections. You will get on-the-ground reports from VOA's journalists in Nigeria, in-depth discussion, and expert analysis of the most important election issues. Join us for Straight Talk Africa special Nigeria Decides right here on Voice of America. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share the ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.